The Joint Higher Education Committee on Region Selection will come to order. The CA will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Chair Fate.
Present.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Present.
Senator Duckworth.
Here.
Senator Clark.
Here.
Senator Farnsworth.
Here.
Senator Kupak.
Here.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Here.
Senator Rarick.
Here.
Senator Atke.
Here.
Chair Rarick.
Here.
Chair Wolgamott.
Present.
Representative Schwartz.
Present.
Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Allen.
Here.
Representative Duren.
Here.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hicks.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Here.
Representative Knorr.
Present.
Representative Novotny. Representative Robbins.
Here.
Representative Scott.
Here.
Representative Cleborn.
Here.
We may have to adjust our list.
A quorum from both chambers is present. The first motion before us all will be the adoption of the 2025 Joint Meeting Committee procedures drafted by House Research and Senate Counsel. We will have Mr. Hopkins and with House Research and Mr. Watson with Senate Counsel walk us through the joint procedures. Who would like to begin?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll review the rules kind of at a high level, and we can field any questions that members might have. Rule number one deals with the passing of the gavel. Rule number two deals with the order in which candidates will be considered. First, the student at-large seat. Second, the Congressional District 5 seat. And third, the two at-large seats. Rule three deals with the nomination of new candidates. Candidates recommended by the RCAC are automatically nominated. Additional nominees require the support of two senators and three representatives. Rule number four allows each nominated candidate to make a one-minute presentation. Rule number five allows for a question and answer period that's 15 minutes long. Rule number six allows the committee to extend the question and answer period. Rule number seven deals with the recommending candidates to the joint convention. This requires a majority of votes from the Senate members present, and a majority vote from all the House members present. So each body is considered separately. Rule number eight deals with how to reduce the number of candidates. If no candidate meets the threshold necessary to be recommended to the joint convention, rule number eight is a process for shortening the list of candidates. A candidate receiving zero votes and a candidate receiving the lowest votes are eliminated, and then additional rounds of voting can occur. Rule number nine provides that if only two nominees remain and they're after one round of voting, the joint committee can call those two nominees forward for an additional 5-minute question and answer period. Rule number 10 deals with if there are two nominees remaining after two rounds of voting, if no candidate has reached the threshold to be recommended to the joint convention, this allows the committee to recommend both of the remaining two candidates as a slate to the joint convention. Traditionally, the joint committee endeavors to recommend one candidate for each vacancy. However, it's not always possible. The committee has deadlocked in the past. So rule number 10 provides a mechanism for the committee to recommend two candidates as a slate to the joint convention.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins, for walking us through. With that, we'll go to a vote. So all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The rules are adopted. I just wanted to make a quick announcement. I forgot to announce also, especially for our Senate colleagues, the mic is always on, so be careful when you're speaking, especially you, Senator Putnam. And with that, I'll pass it to Representative Wolgamott. Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you, Chair Fate. And hey, take it easy on us St. Cloud guys. Come on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Joint Committee and members of the public, next on the agenda, we have the consideration of the recommendation for the student at large seat. At this time, I would like to invite all of the RCAC nominated students to the presentation table. And while they make their way to the table, I will stop to ask if there are any nominations for further recommendations in the student at large seat. All right, seeing no further recommendations, we will begin with our 1 minute presentations. I will note for members of the committee and for the public withdrawal of student at large candidate Madeline Rowe. Sent us notification that she's been withdrawing from this process. Members should have her letter in their packet at their desk. And for members of the public who wish to see that letter, I believe that there are copies outside by the front door here. So with that, we will begin with our presentations, and then that will be followed by a 15-minute question and answer period. I will remind our candidates that your presentation will be 1 minute, and the committee administrator Herring will be giving you a 30-second warning. In the interest of everyone's time, please confine your presentation to 1 minute. And we will start with student at-large candidate Dylan Young. Mr. Young, please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a master's student at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and I am pursuing a degree in higher education policy. I earned my bachelor's from the University of Minnesota Morris, becoming the first in my family to graduate from college. As a first-generation college student, I understand from experience the positive and transformative impact that higher education can have on individuals, their families, and their communities. My UMN Morris experience inspired me to dedicate my career to breaking down the barriers that keep students from accessing and completing a college education. On my journey thus far, I have been a peer mentor, a student body president, and now a public policy student. I'm running for the Board of Regents because I want to ensure that the University of Minnesota offers all students the same opportunity, access, and success that I have received. My ambition is to work hard with all stakeholders to shape the university into an institution that is truly responsive to the needs of all our communities.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Our next candidate for presentation is student at large candidate Flora Yang. Ms. Ling, please proceed with your presentation.
Good evening. Good to see everyone again. My name is Flora Yang, and I'm a second year medical school student and a former undergraduate student body president at the Twin Cities campus. Over the past 5 years, I've worked to amplify student voices across all system campuses at the board level, drawing on my decade-long experience as a University of Minnesota student to advocate for college affordability, basic needs, mental health, campus safety, and so much more. And I'm very grateful to have the support of both and trust of both the undergraduate student government at the Twin Cities campus and the Morris Campus Student Association. I think I know what it takes to bring people together and to listen to diverse perspectives, ask hard questions, and really push for real solutions. As a regent, I want to become someone who shows up, not just during campaigns, but year-round to support our community, engage meaningfully and intentionally with students, and build long-lasting relationships at the Capitol. By the end of my term, I want to be one to say that we've fostered the strongest partnership yet with among legislators and other university systems, and I would be honored to have an opportunity to contribute to that work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. Our final presenter is student at-large candidate Kosar Mohammed. Ms. Mohammed, please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members of the Joint Higher Education Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kosar Mohammed. I'm a second-year doctoral student in the Natural Resources Science Management Program in the School of Food and Ag, and I'm honored to be considered for the next slate of University of Minnesota Board of Regents. To open our time together tonight, I want to begin on reflecting on Langston Hughes's poem, A Dream Deferred. This poem speaks to the loss, frustration, and urgency that arises when institutions delay the dreams of the people that they serve. In many ways, our university is caught in that cycle, a long-standing dream deferred. We're facing distressed projected assets, aging infrastructure, and most importantly, distressed students, faculty, and staff. Meeting this moment requires a bold shift in approach, one that is balanced, pragmatic, and collaborative, moving in lockstep to navigate this unpredictable era in higher education. I'm often asked, why step up now in times of uncertainty and contention? My answer is simple. I care deeply. I believe in the University of Minnesota's promise, and I'm ready to bring my skills, lived experience, and commitment to bear and protect its integrity while embracing the innovative solutions needed to ensure it remains a beacon for all. And with that, thank you for the time.
Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Mohammed. Next, we will move to 15 minutes of question and answer from members of the Joint Committee. Members, please remember to direct your questions to the group of candidates, as each will be given the opportunity to respond to your question. Are there any member questions for our student at-large regent candidates? I recognize Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, the university has struggled with several things. What are your top three issues as a region that you feel that you can add and to be able to contribute to the regions?
Mr. Young.
Thank you for that question. The top three issues that I would like to address at the Board of Regents level and that I think that I can contribute to is number one, college affordability, number two, student basic needs, and number three, public engagement. I think that the incoming university Maroon Golden Bold strategic plan needs to include affordability as a core pillar in our strategic vision. I think that we should do more to support initiatives that address the higher cost, the entire cost of attendance and helping students meet their basic needs. And I would like to present a friendly challenge to the Board of Regents' current approach to public engagement. I am the only regent candidate to visit all five campuses in person, and I've met with over 300 students, staff, and faculty. I did this so I could collect their contact information and maintain long-term partnerships and hear directly from those impacted by board decisions.
Thank you. Ms. Yang.
That's an excellent question. Thank you for that. And there's so many things, you know, especially through all the conversations that I've had with all five of our, you know, system campuses, student governments, different student groups, with legislators, families, parents, alumni. You know, there's so many conversations and so many things that I think we can really work on at the university level. First thing I think is definitely affordability. I was the first one to say during the Alumni Association Forum that I think we definitely need a tuition freeze. You know, accessibility to higher education is so important, so critical, and we as the University of Minnesota, we are a land-grant institution, and it's our duty and our role and responsibility to ensure that our education is accessible for all of our students. Basic needs is a big second point. I think that's been something that I focused on for the entirety of my sort of academic tenure and my 10 years at the University of Minnesota. Like I mentioned, you know, I think we're currently in a food desert. There's so many of our system campuses. More than one, if you go into our campus right now and you pick out five students, at least one or maybe even two of those students are food insecure and housing insecure. And that is something that we cannot tolerate, and that is something that I will tirelessly work towards securing for our students. And I think the third thing is really just mental health. I think, you know, 57.2% of our students have a mental health condition, and 27% of those students are diagnosed during the first year of being a student at the university and a freshman in college. And there's so much more that we can do. I've been one of the only students on PRISM, which is one of the sort of groups that came out of President Gabel's tenure as president of the university. And we've worked towards a lot of things for mental health, but there's still so much more work to be done. And lastly, just a quick thing, is engagement and our reputation and the way that we interact with our stakeholders is so critical. And that's why I spent this past several months, 4 to 5 months, working on sort of a strategic plan, priorities with all of our, with a lot of our stakeholders to put together recommendations and insights for what the sort of new strategic plan advisory committee should really be focusing on to really advocate for our student voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. Ms. Mohammed.
So for me, I've been serving as an economic development practitioner for the last decade in our region. And so for me, it's really around the economics, right? We're seeing a significant need to really understand how are we diversifying and ensuring that the University of Minnesota's budget is diversified and consolidated in a way that is strategic and also really looking at what is that North Star we're working towards. And so for me, as we're seeing this landscape shift in investments at the federal level and then knowing that we're facing a deficit in the next 2 to 5 years at the state level, it's going to be critical for us to understand how do we diversify the current streams of budgets within this University of Minnesota revenue streams. And then also really being able to understand what does it really look like to what really explore commercialization of our research resources, right? So we have various patents that are in stock and on shelves. What does it look like for us to really bring those forward and really think through how they serve as a revenue diversification for the university? The next segment is really around reflective community engagement. There's a lot of work happening at the foundational level with philanthropic groups across the nation around understanding how land-grant institutions like the university can understand redress, and particularly how has that impacted the communities who surround institutions like the University of Minnesota. So I think there's a lot of work that we can do there, especially in partnership with the University of Minnesota Extension Program, and really further amplifying the infrastructure of that program as it really serves as a way to bring in folks who historically have not had access to higher education or have fears around accessing public institutions. And then finally, really strengthening the jewel of our state, which is the mHealth system. It's been a chronic challenge. I know we're in the spaces of exploring partnerships. And so for me, it's really ensuring that we can continue to have our existing services, but also to bring in further services that continue to make us a global competitor, but also to attract various resources.
Thank you, Ms. Mohammed. Further member questions for the consideration of the student at large region candidate? I recognize Senator Fateh.
Thank you, Chair Wolkamott. My question is just in regards to the level of student engagement y'all have already had, maybe how many student groups you've met with, and what have you learned from them?
Yeah, so like, can you also hear me?
Yeah.
Great.
Mr.
Like
Young.
I knew that in my first answer. Before I even decided to run for the Board of Regents, I decided to go on a journey across all 5 University of Minnesota campuses to meet face-to-face with actual students in the UMS system. You know, I really do think that there is a lot of value in that face-to-face interaction, and that's something that the Board of Regents right now needs to work on. So I actually ended up going to Morris, Duluth, Crookston, Rochester, and the Twin Cities campus to talk with students. And a couple of ideas that we came up with in terms of how I, as a regent, and the Board of Regents itself can engage with students is, number one, create a plan for a written agreement with each of the student associations outlining the expectations they have for me in terms of engagement. If they want me to visit their campuses every other semester or have office hours for them to access me or any other ways for them to engage with the student regent, I'm open to discussing whatever they'd like to have. Secondly, there needs to be an expansion of the Board of Regents' current public engagement strategy overall. I think that current efforts are incredibly limited. I do understand that in the past semester, 1 to 2 regents have visited each UMN campus and that they've instituted a virtual comment box in the university website, but I don't think that that's enough for us to truly engage with our communities and to understand how we can have informed decision making and make better decisions for our communities. So as a member of the Board of Regents, I would support initiatives like public comment periods during regular campus meetings, having more town hall events for regular people to come up and engage with us, and any other public engagement strategies that get us out of the boardroom and into the classroom, right? And because of my commitment to public engagement and to that transparency, I have received endorsements from the Council of Graduate Students, the Graduate Labor Union, the Teamsters, the Undergraduate Student Government in the Twin Cities, and the Duluth Student Government Association. So I think it's working.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Ms. Yang.
So I think it's important to be intentional and proactive. You know, that's a big theme that I've not only talked about this year during my campaign for Student Region, but also 2 years ago during my campaign to really empower student voices for the at-large seat region selection. I think from my one-pager outlining consultation process with each of the student governments from each of our system campuses, as well as my conversations with legislators in the past few months, I just want to highlight two of the key insights that I really did a lot of reflection on. The first insight is that I think that the University of Minnesota must embrace and enhance its commitment to the system-wide cohesion, ensuring that all of our five campuses are equitably included and represented in strategic planning and resource allocation, and actually have developing comprehensive metrics that reflect the diverse impact of the entirety of the university system and not just the Twin Cities campus, which we seem to really focus on recently. And I think the second insight that I want to share is that the university needs to expand its outreach efforts to meet stakeholders where we are by proactively engaging with diverse groups, including legislators, students, alumni, community members, in ways that are actually accessible and relevant to their unique perspectives and needs. For example, the university likes to do listening sessions, which I think is really important and really critical. But if we only have one or two listening sessions during the time that most students have classes, we're not going to get as much student engagement as what we want to be able to do. So those are two really key, broad, overarching feedbacks and insights that I got. Aside from that, specifically from my conversations with students, three key themes appear. First is student well-being. Basic needs, mental health, community and belonging, campus safety. These are big things that we articulated when I was the chair of the student representatives to the Board of Regents last year. During our report to the Board of Regents, we highlighted these key themes, and the board actually created a special committee to talk about student affairs for this year. Financial sustainability, academic success are the other two big pillars. And I think when I talked about at the beginning, my plan is to be present. My goal is to go to some of these events that regents are invited to and actually, you know, represent the student voice, represent the university in ways that are proactive and intentional so that I can contribute meaningfully to our community.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. Ms. Mohammed.
So a couple of things come to mind for me, particularly in the various roles that I've played at the university. I serve as an adjunct. I'm a second year PhD student, but I'm also a community member who grew up on the West Bank of the city of Minneapolis, right? And so the biggest things that come up for me right now are that I'm hearing from not only students, but also from community partners who interface with the university is that there's chronic mental health challenges that our students are facing. There's various crises that they're facing, and there's not enough resources in place to really serve them in a very proactive way. We're seeing this across the system, not just in the flagship university, right? And so really being able to address this in a way that partners with not just the university resources that exist, but also our local government partners and our county partners to ensure that their services are on site, right? So that would be one of the key things that I've heard. The other elements really being the lack of access to training and workforce readiness programs and services, right? So many of our students are saying that they don't know post-graduation what they're going to access when it relates to workforce development. They really want to be workforce ready and really get family-sustaining jobs once they graduate. So I think there's really a pipeline situation here that we can fix and really address as a university and begin exploring what hands-on experience work opportunities can look like on campus. The third element really being around healthy food options. Food shelves are not the answer, right? It feels like a pilot initiative, honestly speaking. We need to have permanent infrastructure across the system. And so really thinking through we utilize our existing infrastructure through mixed-use development. Start thinking about how do we create permanent structures that offer those food opportunities and really close the gap that we're seeing around food disparities across the system, and really starting to think about this just outside of the Twin Cities, but on the Crookston campus, Morris campus, Duluth, and Rochester in a really thoughtful manner and really working with our governmental partners across the stream.
Thank you, Ms. Muhammad. Members, we have reached the conclusion of the 15-minute question and answer period. We will now move to a vote. The House clerk will take the role of the House, and the Senate clerk will take the role of the Senate. The House clerk will take the role.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Young.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Yang.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes Yang.
Representative Coulter.
Coulter votes Young.
Representative Duran.
Duran votes Yang.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Young.
Representative Hicks.
Hicks votes Young.
Representative Cleborne.
Young.
Representative Liebling.
Young.
Representative Knorr.
Young.
Representative Novotny.
Yang.
Representative Robbins.
Yep. I'm sorry. Robbins votes Yang.
Representative Schwartz.
Schwartz votes Yang.
Representative Scott.
Yang.
Chair Pate.
Young.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Young.
Senator Duckworth.
Yang.
Senator Clark.
Young.
Senator Farnsworth.
Yang.
Senator Kupak.
Young.
Senator Umu-Verbaten.
Young.
Senator Rarick.
Yang.
Senator Utke.
Yang.
Candidate Yang has received 11 votes. Candidate Young has received 12 votes. Pursuant to our joint rules, any candidate receiving no votes is dropped. Therefore, candidate Muhammad is dropped from the next round. The clerks will now take the roll for the second round of voting. The House clerk will take the roll.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Young.
Chair Rarick.
Don't we have to announce the Senate first before we go to, are we have a round of voting? Don't we have to announce the Senate votes before we go to another round?
I believe the first one is a total.
He didn't announce his votes.
Oh, I just announced the total. You just announced the total. Go back. All right, members, without objection, we will revert to the announcement of the totals from the voting in round one. In the first round, candidate Yang received 7 votes in the House. Candidate Young received 7 votes in the House. In the first round, candidate Yang received 4 votes in the Senate, and candidate Young received 5 votes in the Senate. Thank you. Pursuant to our joint rules, any candidate receiving no votes will be dropped. Candidate Muhammad is dropped from the next round. The clerks will now take the roll for the second round of voting. The House clerk will take the roll.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Young.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Yang.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes Yang.
Representative Coulter.
Young.
Representative Duran.
Yang.
Representative Hansen.
Young.
Representative Hicks.
Young.
Representative Cleborne.
Young.
Representative Liebling.
Young.
Representative Knorr?
Yang.
Representative Novotny?
Yang.
Representative Robbins?
Yang.
Representative Schwartz?
Yang.
Representative Scott?
Yang.
Chair Pate?
Yang.
Vice Chair Putnam?
Yang.
Senator Duckworth?
Yang.
Senator Clark?
Yang.
Senator Farnsworth?
Yang.
Senator Kupak?
Yang.
Senator Umu Verbatim?
Yang.
Senator Rarick?
Yang.
Senator Utke?
Yang.
Members, for the second round of voting for the student at-large candidate, candidate Yang received 7 votes in the House. Candidate Young received 7 votes in the House. And in the Senate, candidate Yang received 4 votes. Candidate Young received 5 votes. No candidates have dropped. The clerks will now take the roll for the third round of voting. The House Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Young.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Yang.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes Yang.
Representative Coulter.
Young.
Representative Duran.
Yang.
Representative Hansen.
Young.
Representative Hicks.
Young.
Representative Cleborn.
Young.
Representative Liebling.
Young.
Representative Knorr.
Yang.
Representative Novotny.
Yang.
Representative Robbins.
Yang.
Representative Schwartz.
Yang.
Representative Scott.
Yang.
Chair Fateh.
Young.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Young.
Senator Duckworth.
Yang.
Senator Clark.
Young.
Senator Farnsworth.
Yang.
Senator Kupak.
Young.
Senator Umu Verbatim.
Yang.
Senator Rarick.
Yang.
Senator Utke.
Yang.
Members, for the third round of voting for the recommendation of the student at-large candidate, candidate Yang received 7 votes in the House. Candidate Young received 7 votes in the House. Candidate Yang received 4 votes in the Senate. And candidate Young received 5 votes in the Senate. Having reached an impasse after 2 rounds of voting without dropping a candidate, I will move that the remaining candidates be recommended to join the convention as a slate. The clerks will now take the roll on recommending candidates Young and Yang to the joint convention as a slate. The House Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Wolgamott.
Aye.
Chair Rarick.
Aye.
Representative Allen.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Duran.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Hicks. Representative Cleborn.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Chair Fateh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Aye.
Senator Duckworth.
Yes.
Senator Clark.
Aye.
Senator Farnsworth.
Aye.
Senator Kupak.
Aye.
Senator Umu Verbatim.
Yes.
Senator Rarick.
Aye.
Senator Utke.
Aye.
There being 14 ayes in the House and 9 ayes in the Senate, the motion prevails and candidates Young and Yang are recommended to the Joint Convention as a slate. I now pass the gavel to Co-Chair Rarick.
Thank you, Chair Wolgamott. Up next, we will have, and thank you, students at large, thank you. Up next, we'll have the 5th Congressional District recommendations to consider. But before we do that, do we have any nominations from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, I'll invite... Oh, I'm sorry. Your hand was right behind the steps. Senator Umuver-Bayton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to nominate Kosar Muhammad.
Okay. So we need two... Second. Oh, second hand. Okay, so we have three hands in the Senate. We need three hands in the House. We have two hands over here. I see hands over there. Okay, so we will be adding Kosar Muhammad to the 5th Congressional District. Yes. And just a note, so the other candidates can come forward now. We have Robert Albright, Benjamin Kaplan. So Benji Kaplan is out of town right now at another campus doing some work, so he's not able to join us. Ellen Luger is here, and Kosar Muhammad will not join again because we've already heard her presentation, but she'll be a part of the voting. All right, we will begin with the two candidates that remain in front of us with 1 minute each. So we'll start alphabetically, and Mr. Albright, we'll start with you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you, Chair Rarick, for providing this forum to briefly describe our backgrounds and vision for the university system. In short, I want to see the university reach new heights reputationally across disciplines, create more access to the highest quality educational experience for its students, and deliver new knowledge, healthcare, and solutions to problems our state and country face, with ongoing diligence in delivering return on investment for students and Minnesota's taxpayers. As a reintroduction, I have 2 degrees from the University of Minnesota and understand the academic enterprise. I've had a long and successful career in the private sector in investing, finance, real estate, and risk management. Concurrently, I spent much of the last 2 decades investing in, developing, and governing nonprofits that improve educational outcomes for all students, but particularly under-resourced students, both in the metro and in rural communities. This work has impacted pre-K through post-secondary because I believe in the power of education to improve lives, strengthen communities, and create opportunity. The University of Minnesota is the most powerful platform in our state to fulfill the promise of education and knowledge creation. I'm honored by the chance to serve as a regent and believe I have the skills to help the university deliver on that promise.
Thank you. And I will note for the record, too, that Benjamin Kaplan did submit a letter, and so that is in your packets, members, and there are some additional letters in the back. Ellen Luger, go right ahead, please. Ms. Luger.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. I bring to this role my skills as a lawyer and my deep governance and agricultural policy experiences. I have had leadership roles in large Minnesota philanthropic organizations that provide me broad relationships throughout our state. My approach and my values are to make decisions in a transparent, accountable way, focusing on our land grant mission and what is best for our students and the university. I see a university that strives for excellence and brings the most affordable, accessible education to the maximum number of Minnesota students. I have deep roots at the university and would be honored to continue to work on behalf of the students and citizens of our state. This role would be my priority, and I have the time and the energy to make this commitment. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move into a 15-minute question and answers from members. Any members have a question? Senator Umuver-Bayton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have 2 yes or no questions for the candidates. Do you support having a public comment portion at regent meetings, yes or no? Do you support banning legacy admissions, yes or no?
We will start with Mr. Albright.
Public comment, yes. Banning legacy admissions, no.
Ms. Luger.
Public comment, yes. Banning legacy admissions, yes.
Okay, did you have a follow-up, Senator? Okay, any other questions from members? Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are the challenges that the University of Minnesota is facing, and how are you going to address those challenges?
Mr. Albright.
Well, I think, you know, affordability for students is key, and the critical role in that is budgeting and you know, trying to manage the efficiency of the university, understanding cost structure. I think that's critical. That the healthcare system, the medical school, and the hospital is going to be, it's probably the single biggest challenge. It's the single biggest line item of the budget. So understanding the proposed Essentia, proposal and how that would work with Fairview is going to be critical. And again, I think, you know, the proposal is a lot of debt, actually, from the two systems. Debt isn't necessarily bad. I've spent my career involved with debt, and I think I'm capable of analyzing that that proposal and trying to come up with something that works for the university, for the state, for healthcare delivery, for medical education. So I guess those are two, without too much more length.
Thank you, Ms. Luker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would I believe the question was about challenges, and I like to think of them as opportunities. Number one is student, and I would enlarge that to campus safety. I've had experience when I was at leading the General Mills Foundation with a public-private partnership where we reduced homicides in the greater metro area. I think it's critical that students and, frankly, all members of the campus feel safe on our campus. And this would be not just the Twin Cities campus, but all campuses. Second, and this is not in priority order, certainly the medical school and the relationship with Fairview, Essentia, whatever that partnership looks like. I am the daughter of a surgeon. I have been on the dean of the medical school's advisory council, and I'm a lawyer. So I bring strategic questioning abilities and an approach to analyzing what that partnership might look like. I also think, and again, as I said, not in priority order, we have a new president. It's a strategic planning year. We have an opportunity to be bold and practical. And so I think as part of the strategic plan, we need to ensure that as many Minnesota students as possible can access and find our university affordable.
Thank you. We have another question from Representative Cleavorn.
Actually, Madam Chair, this question is for you, and I don't know if maybe I missed this in the rules. I'm wondering why Ms. Mohammed, or Koswara Mohammed, is not at the table. These questions are different questions. When running for a student seat, you may answer one way, but when running for the CD 5 seat, you might answer differently. So I'm wondering, is it possible to allow those answers to come forward, for her to come forward and answer these same questions?
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Because we have three different chairs, I need to consult.
Yes,
that was a decision. Because it was a decision among three chairs. So give me just a moment.
Thank you so much.
Representative Cleavorn, I have an answer for you. We are in a new era where we have a tied house, and so three chairs. So Representative Cleavorn, it is custom usage that in the prior times that we have had this joint committee, that if someone was moved to another spot, that since they've already had their time to talk and answer questions, that we don't do it in another section. And I did just consult with the other two chairs, and they're in agreement. If you'd like to ask them individually, you can ask them as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think your answer will suffice. I just didn't know because you might have different response for a different position. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. I fully understand that. And just for the sake of time, we do want to be done by 7:30 also so that our Muslim members can get to what they need to get to. So I'm trying to be as respectful as I can to their customs. Yes, okay. All right, so let me see. Any other questions from the members that are here? Not about procedure. Senator Fattah.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And a similar question to before around your level of engagement and conversations with students. How many, which student groups have you spoken to, and what have you learned?
I'll go ahead and start with Mr. Albright.
Well, you know, I've been a huge advocate for students and high quality education for students at pre-K, K through 12, as well as now at the university system. So when you talk about students, I guess I don't know if I'm limited to just university students, but my engagement with university students thus far in the process is primarily students that I know from my home community. I've had several discussions with them about their, you know, how they find the university, and particularly concerns that they've expressed about, as Alan mentioned, about security issues that I, you know, would echo is important. Important item to focus on. Otherwise, I would just say that I'm definitely an advocate for, you know, perhaps a quarterly student forum and improved communications with the regents, because that's those are the primary, hate to use the term customer, but those are the primary people you're serving.
Ms. Luger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Senator. And I would expand that a bit. I've talked with members of all university stakeholders. So I've talked with staff representatives, faculty, alums, administrators. But I believe your question is referring to students. I was at the student forum that was put on, and frankly, I was quite impressed by that forum and the thoughtfulness of the questions. And what I really took away from my conversations with students is the basic needs issue continued to come up, and I've heard that in a number being addressed in a number of the higher ed committee meetings, and tuition, especially affordability and accessibility.
Thank you. Next question is from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And this is to follow up on the question about banning legacy admissions. So is it my understanding that you would support overturning the region's 2023 decision to ban legacy admissions, becoming among the only universities in Minnesota to continue to allow them? And if so, why?
Mr. Albright.
No, I probably would not vote to overturn that. I mean, you asked me my personal opinion, so but I'm not sure that I would fall on my sword over legacy admissions.
Ms. Luger.
So I don't believe the question is applicable to me, as I responded that I support the university policy, which is a ban on legacy admissions.
Correct. Representative Scott, next question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In my time here at the legislature, there's always been talk about the administrative bloat at the University of Minnesota. And so I'm wondering, as a regent, how you would work to keep administrative costs in check and actually decrease them.
Mr. Albright.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing you have to do is understand the budget and understand the actual cost structure of the university, which I will readily admit is no mean undertaking. And I think that's a, you know, a bit of a drinking from a fire hose exercise for the first 6 months, probably, as a regent. That's the first place to look, and then determine, you know, do those budget items line up with the priorities we're particularly in a strategic planning year? Do they line up with the priorities? Do they generate returns on investment, which I hasten to say are not always financial? There are many returns from a university and an education that aren't purely financial. But yeah, I mean, that's my, and then you start, you know, walking through with the Department of Human Resources and at department head levels. I mean, you know, you can work with the president and the administration, clearly, but I think you probably need to get a couple layers down to really understand how to be effective in that endeavor.
Ms. Luger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the question. I would agree absolutely. You need to understand the budget fully. But then again, I would use my legal skills in questioning and strategically asking difficult questions and holding the administration accountable. I also think one of the really important things that a regent needs to be doing is helping the administration review the university system and how we operate as a system. How can we operate more effectively and efficiently as a system? And I believe there are ways to do that without hurting the educational mission of the university, which I think is critical and the number one priority.
Okay, thank you. We have just a minute or so left. Any other quick questions? Otherwise, we will move to the vote. Seeing no other member questions, we'll close this portion of the night and move to the vote. So the House clerk will take the House vote and the Senate clerk will take the Senate vote. House clerk.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Kaplan.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Mohammed.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes Kaplan.
Representative Coulter.
Mohammed.
Representative Duran.
Kaplan.
Representative Hansen.
Mohammed.
Representative Hicks.
Mohammed.
Representative Cleborne.
Mohammed.
Representative Liebling.
Mohammed.
Representative Noor.
Mohammed.
Representative Novotny.
Kaplan.
Representative Robbins.
Kaplan.
Representative Schwartz.
Kaplan.
Representative Scott.
Kaplan.
Chair Fateh.
Mohammed.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Mohammed.
Senator Duckworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Clark.
Mohammed.
Senator Farnsworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Kupek.
Mohammed.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Mohammed.
Senator Rarick.
Kaplan.
Senator Utke.
Kaplan.
Okay, members, so pursuant to our rules, the candidate receiving the lowest vote will be, zero votes will be dropped. And so we actually have two candidates that have zero votes. Right, and the vote totals are Kaplan, 7 in the House, Mohammed, 7 in the House, and Kaplan is 4 in the Senate, and Mohammed is 5 in the Senate. So we'll be dropping Albright and Luger. And we're going to go for one more round of voting. So pursuant to our rules, the candidate receiving the lowest votes will be dropped. So we're going to vote again. The House clerk can take the roll, and then the Senate clerk can take the roll.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Kaplan.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Mohammed.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes Kaplan.
Representative Coulter.
Mohammed.
Representative Duran.
Kaplan.
Representative Hansen.
Mohammed.
Representative Hicks.
Mohammed.
Representative Cleavorn.
Mohammed.
Representative Liebling.
Mohammed.
Representative Knorr.
Mohammed.
Representative Novotny.
Kaplan.
Representative Robbins.
Kaplan.
Representative Schwartz.
Kaplan.
Representative Scott.
Kaplan.
Chair Fateh.
Mohammed.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Mohammed.
Senator Duckworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Clark.
Mohammed.
Senator Farnsworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Kupak.
Mohammed.
Senator Ubu Verbaten.
Mohammed.
Senator Rarick.
Kaplan.
Senator Utke.
Kaplan.
Okay. So the vote totals are the same. We have in the House 7 for Kaplan, 7 for Mohammed. In the Senate, we have 4 for Kaplan and 5 for Mohammed. And we have to do one more round according to our rules, and then we'll move them forward. So the House clerk can take the roll.
Chair Rarick.
Rarick votes Kaplan.
Chair Wolgamott.
Mohammed.
Representative Allen.
Kaplan.
Representative Coulter.
Mohammed.
Representative Duran.
Kaplan.
Representative Hansen.
Mohammed.
Representative Hicks.
Mohammed.
Representative Cleavorn.
Mohammed.
Representative Liebling.
Mohammed.
Representative Knorr.
Mohammed.
Representative Novotny.
Kaplan.
Representative Robbins.
Kaplan.
Representative Schwartz.
Kaplan.
Representative Scott.
Kaplan.
Chair Fateh.
Mohammed.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Mohammed.
Senator Duckworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Clark.
Mohammed.
Senator Farnsworth.
Kaplan.
Senator Kupak.
Mohammed.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Mohammed.
Senator Rarick.
Kaplan.
Senator Utke.
Kaplan.
Okay. The vote total is the same. So we have 7 for Kaplan in the House, 7 for Mohammed in the House, 4 for Kaplan in the Senate, and 5 for Mohammed in the Senate. And so having reached an impasse after 2 rounds of voting without dropping a candidate, 3 rounds total, I'll move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the Joint Convention as a slate. The clerks will now take the roll on the slate, and they will be Kaplan and Mohammed.
Chair Rarick.
Aye.
Chair Wolgamott.
Aye.
Representative Allen.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Duran.
Aye.
Representative Hansa.
Aye.
Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Chair Fateh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Aye.
Senator Duckworth.
Yes.
Senator Clark.
Aye.
Senator Farnsworth.
No.
Senator Kupak.
Aye.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Yes.
Senator Rarick.
Aye.
Senator Utke.
Aye.
Okay. So we have... Okay, having 14 ayes in the House and 8 ayes in the Senate with 1 nay in the Senate, the motion prevails. I'll now turn it over to Senator Fateh.
No? Thank you, Chair Rarick. Finally, we have the recommendations for 2 at-large seats to consider. Before we move into candidate presentations, I will stop to ask if there are any nominations for further recommendations for the at-large district. Are there any further nominations? Seeing none. We will begin by giving each candidate a chance to introduce themselves. Since we have many candidates, I will ask the first 4 candidates in alphabetical order to come to the table, and that being Jamal Adam, Jeffrey Ettinger, John Gibbs, and Josh Lease will begin. We will allow these candidates to introduce themselves and proceed to 15 minutes of question and answer with the first 4. We will then allow the remaining candidates to come up for 1-minute introductions and 15 minutes of question and answer in the second block before voting begins. And with that, we'll begin with the 1-minute presentation from Jamal Adam.
Thank you, Chair Fatah, Chair Rarik, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Dr. Jamal Adam, an educator, policy expert, and lifelong advocate for expanding access to higher education. As a non-traditional student, I earned my GED before I completed my PhD. That experience is what drives my commitment to ensuring every student has a fair shot at success. And with over 20 years in higher education, I served as a mental health counselor, a career counselor, professor, and academic dean, guiding students from classroom to careers. And as an accreditation expert, I understand how to uphold academic excellence while ensuring financial sustainability. And currently, as the leader of 826 MSP, I work daily to expand the college and career access for first-generation college students through mentorship and skill building. The University of Minnesota is a pillar of this state's economy and future. As a regent, I will champion student success, financial accountability, and bold leadership to keep it a world-class institution. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Adam. We'll go next to Mr. Edinger.
Thank you, Chair Fatah. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I believe I could hit the ground running in the role of regent. I am familiar with the enrollment challenges faced by our four Greater Minnesota campuses. I am knowledgeable about the university's medical partnership issues. I would bring experience with multi-billion dollar budgets from having served on the boards of Hormel, Ecolab, and Toro, and specific experience with the used budget, which our team was able to limit to a 3.3% increase in a year of high inflation. In terms of priorities, I believe that our university should be a nonpartisan place. I felt it was just as important to hear from Justice Amy Coney Barrett in the Stein Lecture Series as it was to listen to her predecessor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I am also a strong proponent of you playing an active role in campus safety, including surrounding areas such as Dinkytown. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Edinger. Last we got Mr. Gibbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity. I am John Gibbs, and I pledge to bring to the board a respectful vigor and diverse experience as a practicing lawyer, business executive, government official, both elected and appointed, and nonprofit board experience. I have the time to do the job well. I just retired from my job at Comcast NBC Universal, and I am completing my final term on the Three Rivers Board of Commissioners. I have the motivation. I love the state of Minnesota. I think most all of us do. But I come from a five-generation family of students at the University of Minnesota and faculty and experiences, most importantly, meeting my wife in the University of Minnesota marching band. And I would love to help other families start their Minnesota and university traditions. I have a vision of how to meet the challenges and thrive on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I call it my AAA guiding principles for the university and the board. Be accessible, be accountable, and be aspirational. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gibbs. Now we'll be proceeding with our 15-minute question and answer period. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. I wondered if you could just tell us what you think the most important role of the region is. I know the governance role is important, but how do you see yourself vis-a-vis the administration and students? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll begin with Mr. Adam.
Thank you. I think the most important role is providing an oversight and strategic guidance to the university. You know, a lot of times, the tenure of a university president is about 3 to 4 years. And so, but there are issues that require a long-term strategic planning. And that is where the role of regents came to provide that oversight and guidance to the university and make sure the university is meeting its obligation to different stakeholders, the communities it serves around the state, and also the other stakeholders such as the legislators. And I think there's another role that regents play, and that's the role of advocacy and being ambassador to the university, and making sure that the public at large understand the role that the university serves in the state's economic innovation and educational excellency, and to, you know, we are currently at the time when members of the public are questioning about the role of institutions. And I think as a society, we're having a crisis of expertise. And that has to do with the university not fulfilling one of the three pillars, its primary service, education, research, and public service. And I think that is a role that regents can also play in making sure that the university engages the public.
Thank you, Mr. Adam. We'll go next to Mr. Ettinger.
Thank you, Chair Fateh. I believe a significant role for the board to play is one of respectful challenge of making sure that the administration's recommendations in many areas are subject to questions and bring in different ideas to see if we can get to a better overall resolution. I do think one thing fairly unique about the Board of Regent role is that it provides public accessibility. That's quite different than a corporate board, which usually, you know, really doesn't go out and meet with shareholders or with stakeholders in the company. I've seen the value of that. Some of our current Board of Regents members are really excellent at making sure that they're hearing from multiple parties and are very visible, and I think that's an important role as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gibbs.
Mr. Chair, member, I quite appreciated both of those answers, frankly. And I mentioned in my intro that I would like to bring a respectful rigor to the deliberations of the board, if that's important to me. It's sort of my brand as well. And I think the board does play a role in helping set the culture of the whole institution. So I tend to that. But a critical role of the Board of Regents, it seems to me, is the strategic planning function. Set the goals. Establish a strategy to chase those goals. Develop some acceptable tactics to be consistent with that strategy and help achieve those goals. Set expectations and identify the resources that are needed. And then don't make it a secret. Get buy-in for that entire strategic plan. And finally, I would say there's a role here to inspire greatness. And I think this University of Minnesota is ready for inspiration for more greatness.
Thank you so much, Representative Liebling.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, recently, as you know, the Board of Regents voted to impose what could be called institutional neutrality on the university, and some would call it censorship. And I would like to know whether you agree with the action of the board and just your general thoughts on the topic.
Thank you. Mr. Adam.
I do think that one of the things I think that distinguishes our higher education system is the concept of academic freedom. And if you look at the scene of the international higher education, that concept is unique to us, that we allow academics to freely pursue their innovation and research. And I think that also has to be balanced with the university's role in the broader community of the state. And so it is, I haven't studied this particular policy that's been passed, but the concept of academic freedom, as a recovering academic myself, I think it's an important one for our institutions. And but who speaks for the university? These are the issues that can, I think, be determined without necessarily limiting or infringing the academic freedom of the faculty of the university.
Mr. Ettinger.
Thank you, Chair Fateh. I would have voted yes on the resolution the other day. I think Professor Painter makes the point that, unfortunately, people in the public do confuse group statements from university officials as being potentially the official statement of the university. But I also think the rest of what Professor Painter points out is important to note as well, which is this is not and should not be intended to limit the voice of individual professors speaking out on their own behalf. And I can tell you from my time as interim president at the university, I received a number of requests from people to discipline, censor faculty members for their own individual expression, which we did not follow through with. And I do believe that is a concern under the current environment, and that we should be very clear that that's not where the line would be drawn.
Thank you. Mr. Gibbs.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Free speech and academic freedom are a cornerstone value of the institution, I believe. And I think, though, the university should be a platform for controversial ideas, but not an advocate for them. And there's such a distinction between the institutional speech and allowing free speech on campus or within the university. And I think the goal of making sure that we have free speech, but we have academic rigor within a classroom, the academic rigor is essential. Points of view, fine to have them, but also it's essential to share the other points of view. Now, if it's outside the classroom, it seems to me that it's important to allow broad speech, but only if it's safe. And that's really an important characterization. I've got a little bit of family history with us. My uncle, Ed Williamson, was the dean of students in the 1960s. And there are a few comparisons between the 60s and what we deal with today. And our family is a bit politically divided. Ed was, fair to say, rather left. My father was, in the 60s, the Goldwater chairman and the Nixon chairman in the southwest suburbs. There was a distinction. Thanksgiving dinners were sort of interesting, I will say. But the Williamson view was, as it related to speech and behavior on campus, that all ideas are welcome, and let's invite controversial speakers, let's let it go, but not if anybody is at risk or dangerous. And my Uncle Williamson became sort of rigid about, let's make sure we protect everybody and let it fly until it's dangerous, and then it's not acceptable.
Thank you so much. Any other questions from members? We will take a brief recess and we'll return at 7:30.
Thank you.
For iftar. Thank you. The committee will come back to order. Next up, we'll be going to the 1 minute introductions and 15 minutes of questioning for the next three candidates. I'd like to welcome Mr. Scott Nagel, Ann Sheldon, and Dan Walter. So please come up. We'll begin with Mr. Nagel. Thank you and welcome.
You can hear me? Okay, thank you for the opportunity. The strengths that I bring are a little different than others. I come from a rural background, agriculture, history, and someone that really understands Greater Minnesota, which is something that has been missing at the Board of Regents over the past many years. And I think when you think about how important agriculture is to the state of Minnesota, providing the education for students and the research is really critical for the economy in general. I bring an extensive background in board and governance, served on many boards over my career. I bring a moderate perspective, I think, to many issues, which I think is very important today in board work. Most importantly, time availability. I'm retired, and I don't view this as a part-time job. I think if you're going to do this job properly, to spend the time meeting with people, being an advocate for the university, you've got to be very involved in participating at all times.
Thank you, Mr. Nagel. Next, we got Ms. Ann Sheldon.
Thank you, Chair. 42 years ago, I came to the University of Minnesota to study engineering, and I took away a lot more than a degree. I found my husband, lifelong friends, and I found a network that has helped shape my family, my career, and my life. I spent my career working at Medtronic, largest medical device company in the world, founded by two University of Minnesota graduates, and a company that still to this day does a lot of research with the University of Minnesota hospitals. I've leaned into staying connected to the university through mentoring students, watching my own son graduate and volunteering with the Alumni Association. Looking back, it's remarkable to see how the university has been intertwined in my life and my career. And now here I sit in front of you, honored to be considered a regent. And so this pivotal time for the university, they have many complex issues in front of them. It's time for them, and they deserve to have a board of regents that are ready to roll up their sleeves and put them number one. And that's who I am. Like Scott, I'm retired. I plan to make this my primary focus and help the university create student success, focus on the hospital of the futures, and making sure that our land grant institution is served to the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sheldon. Lastly, we have Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good evening. My name is Dan Walter. I live in Lakeville, where I currently serve on the city council. I'd like to give a shout out to my constituent, Senator Duckworth, there. This is not my first appearance before a joint higher education committee for regent selection, as I had the honor of serving as the regent candidate advisory council for 12 years, including two cycles as chair. For better or for worse, there's arguably no one who better understands this regent selection process. I know you've all caucused on regents and likely have a sense of who you're voting for tonight, but I want to leave you with one thought. This really isn't a red versus blue or Democrat versus Republican issue. Quite frankly, it's status quo versus reform. It's whether you want regents who see their role more like a corporate board of directors or regents committed to be a responsible, accountable, public governing board. I'm running because I want the Board of Regents to be more than a rubber stamp or a voice of just donor and alumni insiders. I want a board that is accountable to you, the legislators who elect us, and more importantly, to the people who elected you. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much for your introduction. And now we'll go to the 15-minute question and answer period. I'll be asking members, are there any questions? Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to hear from you, what is the vision for the health system for the University of Minnesota now that there's some challenges with the partnerships that are being developed? What is your vision and how will you approach it?
Mr. Nagel.
Well, I admitted in the RCAC interviews, this is my weakness. And this would be one of the areas that I would dig in really hard to understand. Fortunately, you know, this group has elected some current regents that are very qualified, and I think you've done a great job of balancing the board. It's not an excuse for me not to understand it. I think, you know, as I spoke earlier in rural Minnesota, we've got some great challenges that I think, you know, can be supported by the university and its system. In terms of specifically, you know, the issue with U of M Health and Essentia, it's a very complicated process that I need to understand the history, the background. You know, the other huge benefit is they've elected a president that has a great background in that area as well. So I would dig in hard to understand the issues.
Ms. Shelton.
Thank you for the question. I think we need to focus on what our North Star vision is regarding our medical institution. 70% of the physicians in the state of Minnesota are trained at the University of Minnesota. And so how do we continue that, and how do we continue to deliver health care to all of Minnesota, not just here locally or in Rochester, but greater Minnesota? And so I think the university has done a lot. There's a new medical school in St. Cloud that's getting up and running. I think we need to look at NIH funding and look at all the different variables. And my engineering background is such that I take time to look at all of that information, all the different variables, but then keep focusing on that North Star, which is to deliver great health care to the patrons of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Noor. I think that is probably the biggest challenge in the short term for the next Board of Regents is figuring out the hospital issue. Having a world-class teaching hospital, I think, is absolutely essential, not just for the medical research, but for that health workforce part in all areas of the state. So I think that's critical. And President Cunningham, I think, has hit the ground running on this issue. I think she's got the background to help figure out a strong direction, and she needs a board to ask good questions and determine if that is the right direction. I think what concerns me about this is it seemed like there were some issues with Fairview and Sanford that suddenly created the need for the university to buy back its hospital. So I think there is a case that needs to be better made as to why that sudden change necessitated the need for the university to buy that hospital. The economic argument has not changed significantly from when the hospital was sold and when the university couldn't afford to maintain it. So I think that's the big question that needs to be answered. With that, I'm hopeful that it's not just, obviously it's going to require state investment, so of some kind. But I hope that the overall vision ultimately is more than just asking for more money every year for that role. They need to come up with a business model that is sustainable.
Thank you, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would like to ask of you the same question that I asked of the previous panel about the institutional neutrality vote and censorship and, as the other panelists added to that, academic freedom. So if you could please address that. Did you agree with the vote? And I'd just like to hear you discuss the issue a little bit.
Mr. Nagel.
Yes, I did agree with the vote. But, I think it's... Free speech is the backbone of our society. And I think, making sure people have the ability in their own lives, even if they're employed, to speak their mind is something that you have to promote and accept. Having employees, though, post things on websites and do things that all of a sudden look like it's university statements, I think becomes very challenging, especially in today's environment in higher ed where we're really dealing with a lot of challenges with funding and other things. So having that, control. And, I'd like to think that we get really excited about this. I sure hope that this isn't something that President Cunningham every day is monitoring and answering 1,000 questions what somebody can post on a website or official letterhead.
Thank you. Ms. Sheldon.
Thank you. Academic freedom and freedom of speech is critical as we educate our children. That's how we drive critical thinking. We teach them about the edges. We let them decide what their mindset will be. What I don't know about the policy that they placed, I haven't read the policy, so I'll be honest. I watched the meeting, I've seen what's in the paper. I would like to read the policy. I would like to understand more about the task group that they did ask to find out more details to make the decision that they did. I have to believe they made the decision they did because of the current environment. And to Scott's point around who represents the university and does the general public understand something that's posted on a website by a professor may not be the voice of the university. And so just based upon what I know, and again, I'm not a Board of Regents, I wasn't deep in that, I would seek to understand that more. It is a policy. If the policy needs to be changed, I believe that they can do that. I think I heard that they already are going to be looking at it again in October. So right now I endorse what they've done, but I need to, if I become a regent, understand more of what's really behind it.
Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling. Free speech and academic freedom is the entire reason the University of Minnesota exists, or a university exists. It needs to be the place where we can have controversial discussions and disagreements and do it in a respectful way. The university needs to act as that neutral arbiter as an institution. I think it's important that there be the distinction between academic individuals and their academic roles and an administrative function. So I would have supported the current policy. But I do have to say, I think it did, and the larger controversy to me calls out one of the challenges that the board has, that they don't take public comment. They're seen as relatively inaccessible by faculty, staff, students. If there was more of a public dialogue and discussion as part of that, I think it could have been more easily communicated. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota's agriculture industry is vital to our economy and food security. As a region, how would you prioritize agriculture research at the University of Minnesota, ensure that it remains innovative and practical for Minnesota's family farmers, and it allows us the opportunity to be able to find the next Norman Borlaug?
Mr. Nagel.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical, you know, to the human population what we've done over the last 100 years in agricultural research and innovation. You know, the current initiative we have in the farm program down in southern Minnesota, I think, is extremely creative and innovative that will be world class in terms of future research. But saying that, I don't think, you know, eliminating research stations at Morris and Crookston are needed, as, you know, especially on crop research, you don't want to do all your research in one geographic location. You need multiple locations with, you know, we don't grow wheat in southern Minnesota. You grow wheat in northern Minnesota is one example. But there are many, many examples like that you need multiple locations. So it's to me, it's just very critical that we continue that research. And we've let that research, you know, there's still, I see research and animals on St. Paul campus continuing. I think expanding that research there is really difficult with being in the city of Falcon Heights, getting permits. You have buildings that are in disrepair, you know, to get permits to do new things, especially in livestock, I think is really difficult. So the expansion of this in other areas of the state, I think, is tremendous.
Thank you. Ms. Shelton.
Thank you. Just like the university does research on the medical side and takes care of the state from a healthcare standpoint, we feed the world. Minnesota feeds the world. And I learned that from my neighbor and friend, Ron Phillips, who worked and was a professor at the University of Minnesota in the Ag Department. I toured his building, I listened to him, I saw the work that he did. He worked in genomics. He created a hybrid of corn that feeds the world. And we have to continue that. And so I think as a board of regent, along with the president, working on her five-year strategy, research needs to not just be one bucket. It needs to be all the different things that the state of Minnesota does, including agriculture. And so I would look at that five-year plan and what's on there and how do we fuel the food agricultural piece as well.
Thank you. Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Allen, I appreciate that question. I think the original intent of the Land Grant Act back in the day, agriculture was an important part of that. The research that it brings, and I think that needs to always remain a central part of the University of Minnesota's mission. I grew up in a rural community in Iowa, so I've got some experience with agriculture. I worked at the USDA for a period of time. And I would also point out that Norman Borlaug was a native of Iowa. So there's a battle, as you know, between Iowa and he came to the University of Minnesota. So, his experience and the discoveries that he made, I think, are such an important story to tell, and we've got to really find that next generation of it. I just want to echo, I think, what Mr. Nagel said, though, about I think it's, I've always been perplexed by the agricultural research on the St. Paul campus. I think as space constraints continue, we need to look more at expanding that out into the state, and especially as it comes to the coordinate and system-wide campuses, I think we need to look for other opportunities to spread that from the Twin Cities campus to greater Minnesota.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from our members? Representative Schwartz.
Yes, thank you. Are you concerned with the size of administration costs in the university budget? As a regent, how would you keep administration costs down?
Mr. Nagel.
I'm sorry, I missed the very first part of that.
Yep. Representative Schwartz.
Yep. Are you concerned with the size of administration cost at the university? For the university's budget, I'm sorry, for the university's budget. How would you keep the administrative costs down?
Yeah, I haven't, you know, having access, we don't have full access to line-by-line budget items. So it's a hard question to answer, but what I'll share with you, in my business career, the first thing I looked at every month wasn't what we made, it was the expense side of the business. Month to month, year to year, and you know, benchmarking that. And so I think, you know, looking at, are we doing things that are efficient? And a lot of the things, the basis to, I think, how I'll think about decision making as a region is, how does it affect the student experience? And are we doing things, are all the things we're doing really benefiting the student in all our activities? And so it's really digging in line by line and figuring out, where do we have waste? Where are we doing things that aren't efficient? You know, what are we doing that doesn't benefit Minnesotans and the economy of Minnesota?
Thank you. Ms. Sheldon.
Thank you. I know there's a lot of discussion around administration costs, but like Scott, I don't know specifically what they are, so it's hard to be a judge of whether it's too much or not enough. But again, I would lean back on my professional career as well. When you look at budgets, you look at how much is there, what it's being spent on, where it's going. I think the university needs to stay focused on the success of our students. And that's why we're here, is because of our students. And so what can we do to make them successful? And balancing that against the administration that's needed, as well as the faculty and the staff associated with the university, to make sure that balanced budget focuses on students and their experience in making sure that they have success.
Thank you. Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Schwartz. So I do have experience with the university administration because I worked there for 6 years as director of the university news service, which meant I managed public relations for the president at the time, President Brunix, and the Board of Regents, and the central administration. So I do have firsthand knowledge on that, and I'm greatly concerned. That's much of the reason I'm running for regent, because one of the central responsibilities of a governing board, of a public governing board, is to ask those questions. You know, it's the we always get a lot of attention about the president's salary, the $1 million salary. It makes a lot of headlines. To me, that's not the big issue. The big issue is the hundreds of administrators under that are making $250,000 or more. And I'm not sure anybody fully grasps the full extent of that. For me, if it's not a student-facing function, if it's not something that provides student services, whether it's mental health, whether it's counseling, the whole array of things, it needs to be examined. And I think we often hear from the university that there's two buckets. There's state appropriations and there's tuition. Well, there's a third bucket, and it's the current cost. And I'm not convinced that that has been analyzed, that that has been scrutinized the way that it should over the last 20 years. So that would be a priority of mine.
Thank you so much. And with that, we have come to the end of the 15-minute question and answer for both groups of candidates. So we will be moving on to the vote. As a reminder, there are two seats up for consideration. So members may vote for up to two candidates. The House clerk will take the role of the House, then the Senate clerk will take the role of the Senate.
Chair Rarick.
Chair votes Gibbs, Walter.
Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Adam and Sheldon.
Representative Schwartz.
Did you say Schwartz?
Yeah. Representative Schwartz.
I'm sorry, yep, Walter and Gibbs.
Representative Coulter.
Adam and Sheldon.
Representative Allen.
Gibbs and Walter.
Representative Duran.
Gibbs and Walter.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Adam, Sheldon.
Representative Hicks.
Hicks votes Adam.
Representative Cleavorn.
Adam Shelton.
Representative Liebling.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Knorr.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Novotny.
Gibb Walter.
Representative Robbins.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Scott.
Gibbs Walter.
Chair Pate.
Adam Sheldon.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Putnam votes Duckworth Fate.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Sheldon Adams.
He's seeing if anyone's listening.
Senator Duckworth.
Walter Gibbs.
Senator Clark.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Farnsworth.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Kupak.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Adam and Sheldon.
Senator Rarick.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Utke.
Gibbs Walter.
There being 5 votes for Adam in the Senate, 5 votes for Sheldon in the Senate, 4 votes for Gibbs in the Senate, and 4 votes for Walter in the Senate, as well as 7 votes for Adam in the House, 7 votes for Gibbs in the House, 7 votes for Sheldon in the House, and 7 votes for Walter in the House, pursuant to our joint rules, and any candidates receiving no votes and the candidates receiving the lowest vote total will be dropped. Therefore, candidates Ettinger, Lease, and Nagel are dropped from the next round. The clerks will now take the roll for the second round of voting.
Chair Rarick.
Chair votes Gibbs, Walter.
Chair Wolgamott.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Schwartz.
Gibbs, Walter.
Representative Coulter.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Allen.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Duran.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Hanson.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Hicks.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Cleborn.
Adam Shelton.
Representative Liebling.
Adam and Sheldon.
Representative Knorr.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Novotny.
Walter.
Representative Robbins.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Scott.
Gibbs Walter.
Chair Fate.
Adam Sheldon.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Duckworth.
Walter Gibbs.
Senator Clark.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Farnsworth.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Kupak.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Rarick.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Utke.
Gibbs Walter.
With Adam receiving 5 Senate votes and 7 House votes, Gibbs receiving 4 Senate votes and 7 House votes, as well as Sheldon receiving 5 Senate votes and 7 House votes, as well as Walter receiving 4 Senate votes and 7 House votes, no candidates have dropped. The clerks will now take the roll for the third round of voting.
Chair Rarick.
Chair votes Gibbs, Walter.
Chair Wolgamott.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Schwartz.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Coulter.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Allen.
Gibbs and Walter.
Representative Duran.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Hanson.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Hicks.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Cleborn.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Liebling.
Adam and Sheldon.
Representative Knorr.
Adam Sheldon.
Representative Novotny.
Gibb Walter.
Representative Robbins.
Gibbs Walter.
Representative Scott.
Gibbs Walter.
Chair Fateh.
Adam Sheldon.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Duckworth.
Walter Gibbs.
Senator Clark.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Farnsworth.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Kupek.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Adam Sheldon.
Senator Rarick.
Gibbs Walter.
Senator Utke.
Gibbs Walter.
Having reached an impasse after three rounds of voting without dropping a candidate, I'll move that the remaining candidates be recommended to the joint convention as a slate. The clerks will now take the role of the recommending candidates, Adam, Sheldon, Gibbs, and Walter, to the joint convention as a slate.
Chair Rarick.
Aye.
Chair Wolgamott.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Allen.
Aye.
Representative Duran.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Cleborn.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Chair Fateh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Putnam.
Aye.
Senator Duckworth.
Yes.
Senator Clark.
Aye.
Senator Farnsworth.
Yes.
Senator Kupek.
Aye.
Senator Umu Verbaten.
Yes.
Senator Rarick.
Aye.
Senator Utke.
Aye.
With 9 aye votes in the Senate and 14 aye votes in the House, the slate has been recommended to pass. And with that, we've concluded our business for today. I want to thank our members, the audience, the candidates, as well as both of our co-chairs. We have concluded our business, and the committee is now adjourned.